All right, we be rolling.
We be rolling and hating.
You'll probably want to stay pretty close on mic, okay, or talk across the mic like this.
Sure, gotcha. Yeah, okay.
And that'll work well.
We are outside because this is the last beautiful day for the next 2 months.
This is the last most beautiful day of the year.
Yes.
I mean, it was, what, 72, 73 degrees today. It's, you know, a couple
days. About
a
12-mile-per-hour wind, just a little bit of wind.
It's June 26th, so beautiful. Sun was up for a long time. It doesn't get dark till after 9
Mostly
o'clock.
Mostly clear skies, just a little bit of clouds to accentuate some of the sky, and just absolutely gorgeous, beautiful day that is the end of, you know, it's the beginning of the summer solstice, and it's the end of that lag period. We're just going to get now this hot, sweaty gook for the next 2 months.
Yep. So
so we're outside.
We posted a bunch of stuff that I had in the can. 2:15 pre-show, Saver, the night before Saver post-show that we did. We're editing Saver, and let's try to record while Jeff edited Saver shitty post-show, so that's up there. And the hotel, which I called Savered Out, because we were fit to be tied.
We were pooped.
We were fit to be tied for that one. So that's up there. Lots and lots of content. And so now we're going to do a quick pre-show. I guess we'll do a real show.
Yeah, why not?
And then, yep. But yeah, definitely going to enjoy the outside here.
It's a beautiful night. We're looking at some of the stars. The star that I thought originally was Arcturus is actually Vega, is shining down on us brightly.
It would be nice. The only thing that would make it better is if we had, like, big springy mic stand so we could like sit back and relax instead of hunch over this table.
But them's the breaks when you want to do an outside show. I get a nice view of Chance Hop Garden, or his hop vines, I should say, that are all tied up. I have actually one of his hops right here. It's a very young and youthful Cascade hop. It smells very green and not quite ready.
Yeah,
but
it doesn't smell very hoppy at all. It smells like really grassy.
But if you were to, say, bite into a little bit, I mean, you can see some of the resin there. If you bite into it, it's pretty bitter.
Okay.
And grassy. Ugh.
Yeah, it's not quite ready for prime time.
There's the hops.
So, yeah, it's been a while since we've shot this shit. One thing I wanted to mention to you, and I had you do a little look up to, I was listening to the radio and they were talking about, you know, gay and lesbian stuff, and, you know,
yes,
it was,
yes,
you know, LGBT, right? Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered.
Yeah.
And they kept using LGBTQ and, you know, kept saying the Q, and they were like queer and questioning. And I was confused.
Shouldn't that be QQ?
QQ? Well.
And then you'd be like, cry more noob? Because
so I'm like, you know, what does it mean to be queer but not gay? So I looked it up, and Wikipedia doesn't really give you a clear answer.
Wikipedia is the best source for LGBTQ issues.
The best way I come up with is Q means confused. That's about it.
Q means like you're sort of kind of on the way to being gay. It's kind of like the agnostic of gay, I guess.
But then if you read some of the links that are on the LGBTQ page, you know, that goes to queer and questioning or whatever, they like tie in the groups like pansexual and omnisexual, like everything you could think of. But even threw in BDSM.
Yeah, which is, I mean,
that's a kink. That's not really an
that's
orientation.
That's like every woman you see who reads 50 Shades of Grey is into some level of BDSM, right? And so, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that could be as simple as, you know, a little leather whip play once in a while. And it could be as nasty as, you know, I like to be tied up and left in a room for 3 days. That's not how I like to spend my weekends. But I'm a fat, lazy slob, so what does that say?
Anything else going on?
I just find it interesting because we were talking about this a little bit, how I don't think of sexuality as a binary thing, right? I don't think people are either straight or gay. And I don't think that bisexual is halfway in between. I think sexuality is much more a continuum. It's a spectrum, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all somewhere on the spectrum. And I don't think any of us are 100% one way or the other. So, you know, like, I would say right now, you know, I said I'd probably call myself 3% gay. But, you know, depending on the time and the circumstances and at what...
So you do 3 out of every 100 guys? Is that what you're saying?
You know, yeah, more or less. I think that, you know, under the right circumstance, drugs, chemicals, whatever, that percentage can waver. But no, the point is that, you know, we see this throughout history. We see, like, Greeks would have been fine with Sandusky, for example. They you know, the whole man-boy love thing was just something that was taken for granted, just something that they did. Mm-hmm. And it was really... It was really the Middle Eastern religions that kind of put a stop to all that stuff. So, and I just think that you see that in repressed sexuality and things like that. I think that there's a lot more to be said. I mean, I'm still put off by things. And I, like, for example, as much as I respect it, and can appreciate, you know, the rights of people to do it and whatever, it took me a while to be even comfortable with two guys kissing near me. And it was not because that's a wrong thing, but it was because in my head it was there was something that was not matching up. It's like seeing pictures where people have four or five eyes on their head, and it's not matching up right, and your brain is like rejecting it or wants to throw it away. It's like, no, this isn't right. And the example I have is there's an atheist guy on YouTube who dresses up like a girl, and you know, is very much out, and is a her name, I guess, Zinnia Jones. But when he talks, it's a man's voice, and when she talks, it's a man's voice, and so it's incongruous. It's hard for me to get around that,
mm-hmm.
even though, you know, logically, I'm trying to say this is a perfectly acceptable thing for this person to do. But I struggle getting around the cognitive dissonance that is there, and it's a struggle that will become easier as I keep exposing myself to it. But it takes time, and I think you see that in culture, you know, in the acceptance of interracial couples, for example, is not at all something. I mean, it was at one time a very weird thing and very incongruous thing, and now there's nothing to it. And you're seeing that with, you know, gay couples now, mm-hmm. and eventually, I think that sexuality will be treated more as a spectrum.
Yeah, you're probably right, and the you're talking about, you know, the first time you saw, or when you see, you know, two men kissing, how it seems weird. I don't think I've ever, other than seeing it on TV, right? I mean, like on 6 Feet Under, right? That's probably the first time I saw a man on man kiss. I don't think I've ever seen one in person. You know, I've seen, you know, gay guys walking together, or maybe holding hands, but not much more than that. I don't have any gay friends. Mm-hmm. I need to get one. I need to get a black friend too.
We do live in a very kind of white / Asian area, I guess you could say. The largest minority here is Asian of one sort or another.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a big chunk, and if you're including Indians and what, right. and whatnot, then yeah, certainly that's probably, you see more than those, you see more. Well, especially in my day to day, I see a lot more high tech immigrant or, you know, green card, you know, workers than I do, you know, black people.
Yeah.
Day to day. So yeah. We have a black person at work now. Fear's first black employee. Yay.
Do you get like a sticker for it? I mean, is it just a badge, like a merit badge you can put on your wall? is our first Black Knight flight.
I don't know.
And what do you get for a transgender employee? Do you get, like, 3 merit badges? I mean, is it, like, super special?
Well, yeah, because you're knocking off several things at once.
Like, yeah, I guess
imagine
so.
If you had, like, a black transgendered...
a black transgendered... black transgendered atheist Republican would be a very weird mix of things going on there.
Yeah, I'm sure there's one out there, though. You know, I'm trying to think, like, in my previous job, there was a guy I know that I still call myself friends with. Never quite sure his orientation. You know, he's very metrosexual. Had a roommate. Never saw him with a girl until one day, after many years of wondering, I saw him with a girl. So I'm presuming he's just effeminate and not gay, but I still
could
don't...
Be, he could be bi, it could be his sister, I mean, I don't know.
Well, he introduced her as his girlfriend,
oh,
so...
Okay.
And then, you know, the only other gay guy that I really had close interaction with was...
Steve,
yeah.
Yeah.
And he wasn't out, really, when we knew him. You know, we never talked about it, he never said he was gay, it was...
Right. I mean, it
fairly
was,
obvious.
It was obvious, and it was implied, but it wasn't ever spoken about.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. You know, everyone else.
But that was around a time when it was quite common to use "gay" as like, you know, oh, that's so gay.
Mm-hmm.
And now we don't do that anymore. But it, you had to make an effort not to do that around him. But you know, what I was thinking about this actually this afternoon. I used to say retard all the, that's retarded all the time, and I don't anymore. And I, you know, at first I had to make a conscious effort, and I at first thought it was silly to not say it. And then, you know, I thought, okay, people are offended, I'll make a conscious effort to try. And now it just doesn't even come up. I mean, it doesn't.
I think I probably still say that. I don't think I say it a lot, but
I was commenting about something that I found. My new word is asinine. I think that better fits the description. But I, you know, and I used a couple synonyms, but I did not touch retarded or even think about touching it when I was commenting on it. So,
mm-hmm.
So yay me.
Yeah, I think you're very tolerant, Mr. Weiss.
It's
I think I was still using gay fairly often until we had that conversation a couple years ago. You know, and ever since that, you know, it's like, yeah, it makes sense, you know. I don't know, I'm trying to think how to put it, you know, does it mean nothing, or is it unnecessarily using a hurtful word? And, you know, like you said, there's better synonyms, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that it's, there's a sheltered effect of where, you know, something comes into popular usage and it sounds right. There's a feeling where something just fits and it's easy to say and it sounds right. And, you know, dare I say it, I think that, and I hope no one gets offended, but I'm going to use the word, I think that for a while, like back in the late 60s or so, early 70s, nigger was a word like that. Where people would use it because, you know, it just sounded easy and it's, you know, it came out. And it wasn't necessarily to be hurtful, but it was kind of just that slang that people say. And that same thing came around, you know, with gay and now with retarded and other things. And it's just because you hear it so often, because you're surrounded by it, it sounds right and it's easy to throw out. And once that gets expunged from your lexicon by one way or another, it's much easier to not say those things.
No, very good point. I'm trying to see what's going on here. Google's computer brain that looks at cat videos on YouTube all day. Did you read that?
I didn't read the whole story. I didn't realize it was Google. I saw something about a neural network computer, right, that figured out what cats are. through no programming of anybody's doing, it just on its own figured out this is a cat, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Some of 10 million digital images found on YouTube videos. What did Google's brain do? What millions of humans do on YouTube? Looked for cats. The neural network taught itself to recognize cats, which is actually no frivolous activity.
No, it's an extremely complicated mm-hmm. activity. But what worries me, what really worries me, is that this computer is going to start making lolcats. And it's going to be able to do it at the pace of a computer, and it's just going to flood the web. And that's all we're going to see. You know, the entire, and it's going to get, you know, a directive. It's not going to be like Skynet, destroy the world. It's going to replace every, it's going to like edit Wikipedia and replace every single thing with lolcats. And
because it's going to honestly think that lolcats are important.
Yes, this is what I need to do. This is the purpose that I have divined.
It's not going to think that the lolcats are humorous.
No. It's not about being humorous. It's about I have found this, and this needs to be out there. You know, it was like, you know, it's like us with the show. We need to get this out there. I need to spread this, and it's going to be a computer, so it's going to be able to do it so much faster.
The whole internet gets taken down by Google's computer.
Exactly. That, you know, when you start getting, you know, it's gonna start small, and then all of a sudden it's gonna be big, and then like the pictures from Mars are gonna be lolcats. And
imagine, you know, any of those post-apocalyptic movies, right, where everything's burned down and destroyed, but you know, in the digital world, it's just ruins and ruins of lolcats.
Yeah.
And everyone's fighting for the natural resources that are not lolcats.
it's just like laser cats.
That's pretty neat that it learned to identify, because, I mean, it's not easy to identify things, and it learned what a cat was. I was thinking about the other day about ants. You know, we talked about ants a lot, and about how the emergence thing, and, you know, no single ant, you know, we've talked about this a lot, I don't want to rehash it, but I was thinking about using the ants mechanism with pheromones as a system for even, you know, robotic or artificial intelligence, right? Where you have a bunch of little things that just do a search, you know, search pattern, and, you know, they have a certain weight towards following pheromones, and but they leave their own tracks type thing. And, you know, I was thinking, like, it wouldn't be super complex. Like, I mean, doable with, you know, maybe not my technology, but at a university, to build some kind of machine that you could just put out, you know, a thousand of these things, and they see what it does, and it'll probably organize itself.
I mean, they have these, I don't know if you've seen the thing with the quadcopters that they put them directives, and they will figure out where the room is and how to build a tower just on their own.
Okay.
And so they're doing things along those lines. I don't know if you can, I mean, building 1,000 different robots to be able to understand, you know, just building 1,000 different robots is in itself a large engineering challenge. So,
but I mean, the way ants discover things is it's at random. You know, you have a bunch of ants just wandering around, leaving pheromone scent here and there, and you know, some ants follow, some ants don't, and you know, there's it's quite by accident that, you know, it's quite by accident that the second ant follows the first ant into something good.
Well, I thought it's more that one ant, the ants go around. And they sort of do sort of loop-de-loop patterns that mm-hmm. come eventually back on themselves. And if one of them finds something, it will go back on its trail and reinforce that trail.
So does it reinforce? I thought that it was more so maybe the ant does reinforce its trail. And then if that's the case, it's not quite what I want. I thought it was more of a happenstance where one ant finds something and leaves a very faint trail, but nothing really above background noise, right? And a second ant just stumbles across to find something too, and it gets a little bit stronger. And then after a while, it's a serious highway, right, where all the ants are following. But maybe the first ant does, you know, reinforce its trail. maybe just the act of it going back to the nest with its goodies, you know, it's leaving pheromones on the way back. Maybe that's right. enough to do it. But
And that implies that other people, other ants should go that way, and then the trail just gets stronger and stronger and stronger, and suddenly it's a strong trail.
Yeah.
And that would seem to be, I mean, if I were designing a system, that's the easiest way that I would come up with, you know, the system. And nature tends to take the easiest way to get to do systems. Mm-hmm.
Well, you got, there's so many ants in a nest, right? So you got to figure that, relatively speaking, ants are cheap, right? It's easy to make a bunch of ants. So they're just throwing numbers at the problem, really. You know, a lot of compute resources and just throwing it all out there and see what they find. And they find things. I was thinking about this the other day because we were walking down the sidewalk and there was an ant highway, you know, going down the sidewalk and crossing the sidewalk. And, and you know, this is the point where the pheromone trail was really strong because there was hundreds and hundreds of ants just going back and forth. And, you know, and then we have some ants and they're having a little ant problem in the kitchen right now. And I'm watching them walk around the counter and whatnot. And I'm like, you know, just thinking about how they're leaving pheromones and whatnot. It's just really cool.
You should read E.O. Wilson. He's the premier ant guy.
I think I've heard him interviewed.
Yeah.
Pretty sure I've heard him interviewed on Science Friday.
Harvard dude.
He's kind of nerdy about ants. He gets excited about ants.
Yeah, that's his big thing is ants. I mean, I think he is an evolutionary... I want to say he's an evolutionary psychologist, but I'm not quite sure if that's right, but I know that he loves ants.
Mm-hmm.
And likes ants in the pants, as one would say, but not in his pants.
So much table noise out here.
At least the popping stopped.
Yeah.
They were lighting off firecrackers and small fireworks. If you want to check out something, look on YouTube for, I think it's Shorty's Fireworks Explosion. There's a little bar about a mile from where I work that sets up a fireworks stand every year, or at least they used to, because they set up one this year. And it exploded. $50,000 worth of fireworks in one very massive night show. It's the YouTube. I said the only thing that's annoying about the YouTube is people need to learn when they're recording video, particularly on iPhones, turn it sideways.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do this holding up thing.
Yeah, brother-in-law did that the other day. They're in Disney right now, and he's shooting a video. Like, and people are cut off, you know. Uh-huh. So, like, oh, come on, just turn it sideways, and it'll be just like a real video camera.
Let's see if I can find it, because it's pretty... Whoa.
Oh, sorry, we're going to an IPA.
That's like Chinook in there.
It's called Chinookie.
Nailed it. Shorty's Fireworks. I think that's what it's called. I just want to make sure so you can. So everyone who's listening to this can see. Yep, Shorty's Fireworks. There's a bunch of them, actually.
Once you get a couple fingers blown off, you get the nickname Shorty. So at least when you lose it about a knuckle or so. Apple launches new podcast app. That might be relevant to us. Let's see.
It might be. I'm glad to see that Apple is starting to remove things from iTunes, because iTunes is such a bloated piece of shit software.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a mobile piece of equipment, right? It's an app. Does this download podcasts in the background?
I'm pretty sure what this does is this actually separates the podcast from the rest of the music stuff.
Right, but will your subscriptions download to your mobile in the background, or do you have to do them in the foreground like you do now if you download them direct to mobile? That's my question. I don't know if you have the answer, but that's my question. Hopefully they have something that will download your podcast in the background.
I mean, right now it's all iTunes managed anyway. I don't know.
I mean, you can go into iTunes on your phone and go subscribe to a podcast and download a podcast.
Right, yes.
But it doesn't... You cannot configure it to say, hey, download the new Craft Beer Radio when it comes out.
Right.
You actually have to go and choose to download it from your phone.
Yes.
Only your computer will download it automatically.
Yes.
So it would be nice to have those things on.
That is correct.
So hopefully they add that, but I'm not holding my breath.
No.
Because they don't like running things in the background. Especially things that would pull down lots of bandwidth and use lots of battery.
Well, they still have that limit. I mean, there is a limit of, I want to say it's 25 megabytes.
Well, it still could be over Wi-Fi. I mean, it could...
Wi-Fi, there's no limit, right?
But they could definitely background it then, you know? Like, right now, they'll do the iTunes wireless sync, but your phone has to be plugged into a power source.
Yeah, it bugs the hell out of me. And I had to turn it off, because, first of all, my phone is never plugged into the power source when it's not plugged into my computer or into my car.
Okay.
So it was kind of pointless anyway. But
if you had like a dock, like a speaker dock.
Right. Okay.
Then it would be useful.
That might be a way to be useful. But A, I don't have that. But B, it was fucked up on Windows, especially because it would like detect that my iPhone was there, but wasn't able to connect to it, and it would bring the window to the front all the time. And it would do this like 5 times in the course of a minute. And so I just had to shut the whole thing off and just said, screw it.
Gotcha. Dead air.
I
showed Greg, I've been working on my electric brewery again. Spent the weekend doing a bunch of hardware revisions and... So last night I finally got it all put together, and couldn't get the LCD to work. So like I was like testing cables, and I found a couple shorts in the circuit. So I got the shorts fixed. Had a couple shorts on the switch, and last night.
Wow! What caused all these shorts?
It's really small solder pads and connections, and I just had little shorts when I was soldering stuff. Really tiny. So it took a little bit of time to find them, but about 1:15 or so this morning, had it all working. I still need to do some work on the software, make the software a little more responsive, user-friendly, but then I'll have, I am about ready. Maybe by next weekend I could have an electric hot liquor tank. I'm pretty excited.
And the hot liquor tank does what?
Hot liquor tank makes the hot brewing water to put into your mash. So that takes like 2 hours. I got to get like...
So it just heats the water.
I need to get like 15 gallons up to 171 degrees. And that takes like 2 hours.
But it's just water.
Yeah.
So why is it called liquor?
Well, it's water that's prepared for brewing, so you might add salts to it. You might... So when you... If you use prepared water, it's brewing liquor.
Okay. But a water heater just sounds more intuitive, I guess.
Yeah, it could be called a water heater, but they call it a hot liquor tank. And I could also use it.
Maybe because when you say hot liquor tank, I mean, I'm not thinking like liquor, like you know, liquor in bottles, but I am thinking like, oh, it's some
sugary
mush. Yeah, right.
It's sugary. Yeah. No, so that's called wort, right?
Yeah.
Hot liquor is just the prepared brewing water. So it might be tap water, it might have some gypsum added, it might have some calcium carbonate added, but it's just the water prepared for the mash. Anyway, I could also use it as a brew kettle if I'm doing an extract batch.
Okay.
I need to get some more parts. I need to spend another $50 or so if I want to outfit my brew kettle. Electric, and I will, but
it doesn't seem like that much to spend.
I already have a lot of money into it too, and I got other things to spend money on right now.
I guess I spend $50 on this. This is a power connector for my MacBook, so I don't have to keep unplugging the one I have at home. So I can take this one with me.
Right.
And I just spent $100 on a new router. When I had a perfectly good one at home, and you may say why. Why, Greg?
Why, Greg? Did you get a new router?
Why did you get a new router? Well, because I'm working from home on Thursdays now, and last week I did it, and twice my router shut down while I was on the VPN. And I asked guys at work about it. Shut down in case Wi-Fi just stopped working. I had to reset the router. And I asked guys working them, yeah, cheaper routers do that. They get overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a $100 Netgear router.
Cool.
A dual band, like super.
Oh, dual radio. That's nice because your phone will connect on the 2.4 gigahertz, and your computer will connect on the 5 gigahertz. If you only have a single radio, then everything degrades to the 2.4 gigahertz. You won't get the full throughput. That's what we do at work. We have actually two different SSIDs.
Oh.
We have a Vir, which runs on the 5 gigahertz band. We have a Vir backup, which only runs on the 2.4 gigahertz band. And if you go on your iPhone Wi-Fi, you only see a Vir backup, because the iPhone doesn't have a 5 gigahertz radio.
So, but yeah, so this new one, which I haven't installed yet, but I have it, should do the job for me. It should be more than capable. I mean, mm-hmm. It's got gigabit Ethernet, and it's got, you know, it was the fastest one. It had good ratings to everything. So I was like,
yeah, trigger. The gigabit Ethernet is it's useful if you're using your router as a gigabit switch.
Yeah.
Right? You really don't need the gigabit to go out to the internet, but if you're going to use like, the four or five ports on the back as a Ethernet switch. When
you're transferring any files between different computers is nice.
Yeah, that's useful for sure. When I upgraded mine, I decided not to spend the money on the gigabit part. I mean, I have a 8-port gig switch down there already.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, from there to the router to the internet, just a slow path. I didn't really need the gig there.
But the thing was, it was interesting to me that the explanation, which the VPN was overwhelming. But it made a weird kind of sense, but I wasn't sure. So I'm wondering what you think.
The packet's not any more heavy than a normal packet. I mean, other than, you know, maybe the payload's just generally bigger, right? So there's more traffic. But I mean, if you're gaming or surfing the web heavy, it shouldn't be any different than passing the VPN traffic. It's not like you're terminating the VPN on the firewall.
Well, I'm not sure whether I was ever doing much. I mean, doing some BitTorrent stuff, but that was just downloading for the most part, whereas VPN is back and forth.
I mean, yes, there are crappy cheapo routers.
This is a $30 router. It is like one of the cheapest ones there.
Did it get hot?
No.
No?
It's also what Netgear is, actually. But one of their very, very cheap routers. Got good ratings, I mean, and it's still active.
I've
learned that routers have a 2-year lifespan, period. I mean, mm-hmm. they just break. And it's weird because I have had much more routers break than hard drives break, and I've used hard drives.
Routers do burn up, it seems. Something like the radio just goes; they're not as good as they were when they were new. You know, up until now, I had a pretty good one. You know, it's basically the granddaddy of the wireless access points. It was the Linksys WRT54G,
sure.
The one you can run open source firmware is on. And the Linksys, with the Linksys firmware, it sucked. I had stopped using it. I replaced it with a different router, a Netgear, I think. And then I learned about these third-party firmwares. And I'm like, well, I got another router. That thing crashes.
It's those blue ones. Those blue ones with two antenna.
Yeah, it was crashing every couple days. You know, it was a piece of crap. Crashing all the time. I figured it was a hardware thing. But I'm like, you know, what am I going to lose? Well, if I brick it trying to put this new software on, no loss. It didn't work anyway. I put on, first I used OpenWRT, and then in the long run, I was using the Tomato, what they call the Tomato firmware, and I was using it just until a month ago.
Because it's very good.
It was very good. But no, I was using this old router that wouldn't run for more than a few days without needing reset. Mm-hmm. I put on Tomato firmware, and I used it for 6 years.
Yeah, wow, that's and a long worked, time to
worked,
get a router.
Worked fine. Thing worked great, actually. The reason I finally upgraded it was it couldn't. We talked about this. It couldn't do NAT fast enough to keep up with my internet connection. The CPU on the thing was an old CPU. It could only NAT my packets at about 30 megabits a second, and I had a 50 meg link. So, you know, I upgraded to a new router, only to find that my internet was capped back down. But I was talking with my connection at the cable company, and they had to do some maintenance, and they made it inadvertently, so I can probably get it opened back up.
Oh, really? Because I know that Damien
got Damien got opened up, and I just need to ask.
No, he didn't get opened up. He bought it.
Oh, I thought he got opened up.
No, he bought it.
Oh, okay.
He was spending the money for it. So,
well,
anyway, remind me. Post show, I do want to have an interesting discussion science related, so you can tune out if you want to, but I have a new, very interesting and novel way of viewing or putting a mind's eye into some sort of some quantum mechanical phenomenon you may appreciate.
Oh, cool. Sounds good to me. Now we already had like 4 beers tonight. Now we got to do the main show. Awesome. It's going to be a wicked night.